It is 8:33. There we go. Can I get the microphones working? We're going to do a program here this morning on the radio. Thank you for joining us here on Quicksland this morning. Mostly sunny today. Highs near 80 degrees. We will have south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then mostly cloudy. A fair chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight. Lows in the mid-60s. South winds 10 to 15. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy. A slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the morning, then clearing. Highs will be in the upper 70s. West winds around 10, shifting to the northwest this afternoon. And it's time for our monthly call-in program here on Information Radio Quicks. Joining us is Mobile Utilities Director Mary West Calcagno. Thank you for joining us today.
You're quite welcome.
And glad to have you in the studio. We'll take phone calls if you have any questions out there about things going on with utilities or any of the topics we touch on this morning. Go ahead and give us a call. And one of the first things we want to talk about this morning is stormwater monitoring. And you've got some results that came in recently.
We do. We have three lakes in Moberly and Randolph County that we monitor with the partnership with the Lakes of Missouri Volunteer Program. Volunteers monitor the water quality in the lake about every 3 weeks from earlier mid-April all the way through the end of September. And we don't get instantaneous results. We get the results about a year later. Just recently got the 2018 results. And in looking at those results, of course, we get the Sugar Creek Lake results. We monitor that lake much more frequently and run those tests ourselves at the lab and in the water plant. But looking at the results for Rothwell Lake and Waterworks Lake, wanted to talk to folks about judicious use of fertilizer. What we're seeing is a rise in nutrient levels, particularly in the spring and fall when folks are out fertilizing their yards. And then this year, of course, all it's been is stormwater. It seems like every few days it rains some more. So what we would ask is that people would be very careful if... You know, lots of times people think if it a little does good, a lot does better. That is not necessarily the case with fertilizer. When that ends up in the water in the lake, it can cause problems with algae blooms and things like that. And we want to avoid that in the lakes in our park.
Is it necessarily just too much fertilizer, or maybe they're putting it at the wrong time and the stormwater is washing off before it's had a chance to get into the ground where it's supposed to be?
That is a big part of it. We have seen some fertilizer applicators, sometimes the commercial folks, out spraying just before a rain event is going to happen. I think part of the other problem is that as homeowners, we are not as attuned to what nutrients our yard needs. So it's the, well, I've always fertilized my yard every few weeks, and that's what I need to do. One thing that I have learned is that the soil pH matters a lot. And so if you're just fertilizing but you don't know what the pH of the soil is in your yard, then that phosphorus and nitrogen is not available. It just kind of sits on top of the ground, or if it soaks in a little bit, it just really is not available for the plants. So the best thing you can do is find out what the soil pH is, and sometimes lime is the best answer, and you may not even need that fertilizer.
Now, explain for our listeners, what is the problem with an algae bloom in the lakes? What problems does that cause?
Sure. So there are a couple, well, there are thousands probably, species of algae. There's nuisance algae, which just turns the lake green. Ends up, there can be strand algae or just cellular algae. It's important in the fish, in the food chain for fish and other aquatic organisms. But when there is too much, and the algae dies, it goes through its natural life cycle, it actually depletes the oxygen in the lake. For another species of what's called blue-green algae, it's not actually algae, it's a cyanobacteria, that algae has neurotoxins within the algae that are harmful to pets, dogs that swim in the lake, can be harmful for people. Of course, we don't allow swimming in any of the Moberly lakes. But we want to keep the lakes so that the cyanobacteria, the blue-green algae, do not have what they need to thrive. And so we were seeing small amounts of cyanobacteria last year in the lake. Alexa Missouri volunteer program began monitoring for that in every sample at every lake last year. So anytime we see that start, and, you know, even at the very lowest, just above the detection level, we want to get on that and be proactive to prevent that from becoming a problem in Moberly.
And obviously a problem if people aren't swimming, if they're near the lake, obviously some water can splash on them, or if they're eating fish they pull from Rothwell Lake.
Exactly. Or if the dog is in the lake, you know, it can cause all kinds of problems. So we haven't heard of anything like that. I don't want to, you know, this isn't a scare tactic. It is just us being proactive and letting people know how they can help us better manage our lakes.
Do we know if other communities are seeing similar rates, or is this something that may be a unique problem to Moberly that we're
seeing? It is not unique to Moberly. There have been some beach closures and things like that in some Missouri lakes because the levels of this blue-green algae are much higher. So, like I said, it's just us being very proactive.
All right, so something to keep an eye on, just encouraging folks not to over-fertilize right
exactly,
now.
Exactly.
All right, our phone numbers are 263-2424, 1-800-892-2300. Are we seeing other issues with stormwater? Because I know we've had a lot of rain this year.
We have had a lot of rain. So we see stormwater everywhere. The city is in the process of design with one of our consultants for a couple of detention basins. As we do improvement projects, as more construction goes on around town, we have more stormwater running off. There are some areas that need to be addressed, and we're looking at some regional facilities for stormwater detention. One is on the north end of town that will be in the newly developing Kiwanis Park. The other is one that will be in or near Fox Park on the south side of town. So looking forward to those and hopefully solving some of the runoff issues in those areas. The challenge with stormwater is always funding. It's hard for us to charge people for the stormwater that runs off of the property. So we try and find ways to partner with other agencies or get grants where that's appropriate or available. We have an opportunity right now. We're working with the County Road Commission and the Special Road District, I should say, the Randolph County Commission, Moberly Community College, to apply for some grant money for hazard mitigation to help with flooding on Seven Bridges Road. So wherever we can find an opportunity to get some grant match money to do some of those projects, we look for those as well.
And it's been a growing trend to try to keep stormwater and sanitary waste separate, right?
Absolutely. The more of that we can do, the better. It costs us a lot of money to treat stormwater, but we have to take a more holistic look at it, because for every gallon of stormwater that I take out of the sewer, that's a gallon I add to our stormwater system. So we have to look at those designs when we do those separation projects and see what the impact is downstream. So it's a little bit different approach in how we look at that. I've been talking to some of the developers who are building even some of the smaller homes or smaller planned developments in town to do some voluntary stormwater controls, even on the smaller lots. If a landowner, if a property owner can hold back that first hour of peak flow, it makes such a difference, both in the stormwater and in the combined sewer system, that it just helps everybody out.
On a large scale, is it more cost efficient to build several large stormwater holding detention centers, or do you want smaller centers throughout the town, or is it vary from
both.
Time to
okay. We want both. It is extremely expensive to build stormwater detention, for instance, downtown. For us to do that, we would have to dig big holes in the ground and put in underground storage. For newly developing subdivisions, things like that, it is more cost effective for them to build a large detention basin for their development than contains the stormwater for the subdivision. It would be more costly for them to put something in at every house. But for folks who are willing to do rain barrels or small rain gardens, to put their septic, or not septic, their sump pump out where it runs through the yard before it gets to the street, that all allows for percolation. It recharges the groundwater. Where if they just pipe it straight out and dump it into the ditch in front of the house, it actually causes more erosion and more stormwater problems downstream.
All right. And I guess that kind of leads into, you talk about the planning situation. It's going to be on the ballot next April, some of this covering the cost of doing all this.
Exactly. So the city council has decided to put on the April ballot a question for allowing us to issue some bonds for capital improvement planning, capital improvement projects, and extension of the capital improvement sales tax. So this won't be any new tax. It will not require a raise in rates. It will be paid for through revenue that we are already collecting. What it will do is allow us to borrow money at 2% or less through the state revolving loan fund, and do some really big projects quickly so that we can get caught up on things. We all know that we need new water mains in town. We have a project that's going to kick off soon on Harrison and Garfield to replace about 6 blocks of water main. And there are just more projects like that that we need to do.
And just to reiterate for our listeners, it doesn't cost them anything more. The bond is just so the city can tap into future revenue to pay for those projects now.
Exactly. What we know is that construction inflation cost, as a rule of thumb, is about 3% per year. So if we can get 2% money and do that work now, it's actually saving us money in the long run. And our infrastructure is at the point where we need to make an investment so that we don't see more catastrophic failures like we did about a year and a half ago.
Cheaper construction right now, plus you're avoiding future problems that can cost a lot more money.
Emergency repairs are always more costly, so if we can do this on a planned basis, it helps.
263-2424, 1-800-892-2300. And obviously, summer like this one, where we've seen a lot of rain, especially in spring as well, obviously the water mains, the water sewers, they're all getting a lot of extra pressure because of all the storms we've had this year.
They are. We actually had one lift station this spring that failed. Both pumps in the lift station failed, and so we have a trailer-mounted pump that we ran for some time. The pumps were obsolete, so we couldn't just order replacements like we normally would, and we ended up ordering parts and built pumps from scratch to get the pump station back in line. We were fortunate in this case that those parts were available. Otherwise, we would have been looking at an emergency rebuild of a pump station. So one of the things that, and I know this sounds really strange, is that we attended a drought response workshop with EPA earlier this summer. It seems strange to talk about a drought in the middle of flood, but Missouri has, in fact, there were parts of Missouri this year that they were saying were starting to get into a drought situation. And so there is a federal regulation that's going to require us to do some emergency response planning, drought response planning, because we can't always count on Mother Nature to fill the lake back up. So how do we handle situations like that? And that's one of the things we've been doing, source water protection planning with a stakeholder group to try and keep the sediment out of Sugar Creek Lake. We want to preserve the capacity that we have in the lake as long as we can. We have a pretty good plan put together, some partners that are willing to work with us in the watershed. In fact, we had one of the industries in town step up and decide to do some conservation measures on farm ground that they own next to their facility that's substantial. So we know that It's not all coming from the farmers. In fact, a good portion of the sediment is coming from town because there's so much runoff that comes from places inside of the Sugar Creek Lake watershed. So it's an all of the above kind of solution.
Are there technological changes out there or technologies that can improve that filtering that we just don't have here in Moberly yet down the line, maybe we can afford things, upgrades to help improve that filtering that you talk about?
I think that there are, in talking with my stakeholders that are in Soil and Water Conservation District, there are some practices that could be adopted more widely for cover crops and things like that do help. I think that for our large developers that have already built lots of parking lots and roofs and driveways and things like that, if they're willing and open to working with us on how we can slow some of that runoff down, there are ways to do that. It's just if everybody does a little bit, then hopefully no one will have to do a lot. And that's kind of my many hands make light work.
All right.
Kind of a solution.
One other thing we want to talk about before we let you go, water meter change out coming.
Sure. We've been looking. I know we've talked a lot about the water loss in Moberly, and I've spent the last 2.5 years trying to find where that water is going and why we can't account for it. And a couple of things kind of came to a head. The biggest one is that our meter vendor came to us and said that our system was being end-of-lifed. And so what that means is that they no longer manufacture the little mushroom thing that sticks through the top of the meter lid that reads the water meters every night. So because of that, we have to look at new technology and figure out how we're going to read the meters going forward after 2021. We had a vendor come in and look at what the accuracy of our water meters was, did some testing, found out we had some issues there. And so just kind of put all of the pieces on the board and said, okay, what's our next move? And a full system meter change out is what the answer is. We're going to start this fall with the large meters, the 2-inch and above. Commercial meters will be first. Probably next spring, we'll move into the residential meters. We don't want to be changing residential meters in the middle of the winter. We don't want to cause any more problems if we do have the bad winter that some folks are predicting. So we'll be changing billing software as well.
Does the lack of accuracy in the current meters, does that provide any explanation to the water loss that you've noticed?
Yes, it does. Particularly on the large meters, I've seen some interesting statistics lately. About 3% of our meters are 2-inch and above. They account for 28% of our billed water use. So if those meters are not accurate, that's a big percentage of our water. And so those are the ones we're looking at first.
Is that all undercount or overcount, or is there some fluctuation both ways?
We haven't seen any of the meters that we've tested that are overcounting. In some cases, we see meters, large meters, that register no low flow. So anything under 10 gallons a minute, they're just not picking up that flow. So it's going to be, the good news is people have been getting a discount on the water that they've been using. But the bad news is that that's going to come to an end.
I know it's been an ongoing issue. Have you found other sources of why there's a water loss? Have you found other explanations besides the meters as well?
We've looked at the billing system. We had a billing system audit about a year and a half ago, identified some issues with the data transfer between the people who read the meters for billing and the actual billing software. We have addressed those issues with the billing software vendor. It has gotten slightly better, but not nearly as much as what we expect with changing out the meters.
Not finding any leaks or anything along the line, I think.
In Moberly, because we have that tight clay soil, if a water main's leaking, it's going to surface. We address leaks quickly. We account for when there's a hole in a water main. We calculate how much water we've lost to that leak, how long we think it's been running. So we actually figure out what that flow is. The water loss that we're looking for is the stuff where I just don't know where it's going. If the meter change does not yield that answer, then we will do a leak study in Moberly.
All right. Mary West Calcagno, the Moberly Utilities Director, has been our guest. Thank you for your time today.
You're welcome.
And we'll be back. When we come back, we will have an interview with the Randolph County Local Emergency Planning Committee's Charlie Peel talking about the recent regional awards. That's coming up next here on Information Radio Quicks.